What's up, Pels fans? Welcome to our sixth episode of Bird Call. This is a podcast dedicated to SB Nation's TheBirdRights.com. Today we are featuring our Bird Rights buddies, Kevin Berrios and Jamile Dunn. What's up, fellas?
What's up?
Hanging out, man.
Yeah, glad to have you guys. We got a lot to talk about. Let's get to it. First of all, before we get to any of that, I just want to thank everybody for listening in, and I want to thank the Bird Rights community for retweeting and really supporting us. Also, with that being said, go over to thebirdrights.com. Ollie, Fish, all of our guys have great stuff up there, previews for the Summer League, as well as some free agency reactions, breaking down all the latest news, etc. And as always, you can hear this episode and many more, including our visits with Locked On Magic's Philip Rossman-Reich, Bleacher Report NBA's Dan Favalli, and 16 Wins a Ring's Christian Rivas at blogtalkradio.com/thebirdrightsNBA. But enough with the details. Let's get to Jrue Holiday. He had his press conference yesterday, and we've got some of the details on his contract from B-Ball Insider Jamile. Let's start with you. Holiday said that the message was pretty much, we want you back, from all of his teammates. I guess that's what I needed to feel comfortable. He said that's a big part of us as well. Dell Demps has put together these guys, just making me feel like brothers. It was an easy choice. Jamile, success starts with culture. As upset as we've gotten with free agency, and it's hard not to jump right in and hear some names coming our way, this has to be an encouraging sign, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely encouraging. I will say this. I have a personality flaw in that I am somewhat allergic to bullshit. And like, it's why I don't enjoy these post-signing press conferences, because if it was so easy, then why, when the Pelicans offer you $126 million, do you have to sleep on it, right? This should have been done at midnight if it was such an easy choice, right? But, and it's not like Holiday did us any favors, right? If you wanted to be here and you felt like this was family and all that, then why had you basically been the Pelicans, you know, over a table and use every bit of leverage you have? We see guys all the time who really want to win. Like, and look, I'm not someone who's always asking players to give back money. I don't believe in that, really, you know, because just giving it to an owner. But at the same time, Holiday and his agent know that his number is probably closer to 18, 19 as what's a fair deal for him. But now he's getting paid more than Anthony Davis. So, you know, whatever. I'm not going to, you know, kill somebody for getting as much as they can. But at the same time, don't act like, you know, the franchise is what's at the forefront of your thinking. Now, in terms of basketball, the Pels did need to do this, right? They did need to bring back Holiday. I know there's been some disappointment with him. He's flashed for us in the past, and then, you know, disappointed at other times. I do still think he's really talented. You know, you can't really discount how much of a distraction your wife having, you know, a brain tumor is. So I think it is reasonable to think that maybe he might be a bit better this season. And like you hinted towards on the culture side, you know, Jrue, for all the criticism that people give him, me being one of the main critics, he is a good guy. I do believe he's good in the locker room. His teammates do like him. And, you know, just keeping a piece like this, had Jrue Holiday left, who knows who the Pels would have replaced him with? You know, it's hard to even say. But keeping the continuity of this little core they have together, and hopefully they can bring in a point guard at some point to play alongside him, which I think would sort of accentuate his game. But I think it was a really good move for the Pels, despite the fact that they had to overpay somewhat.
Kevin, I'm going to jump in and I'm going to defend Jrue Holiday for a moment, and then I'm going to throw it over to you. Truly, he got more than any of us hoped we would get. I personally was hoping it was closer to something like 5 years, $100 million. But with that being said, we have no idea what the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Indiana Pacers were rumored, what their level of interest could have been. Minnesota moved in so quickly on Jeff Teague that you have to think they got whispers that Jrue Holiday was re-signing back with the Pelicans, because he would have just been such a great fit there, and his age just matches up with the youth of their squad over there. And then we heard the Pacers were coming in strong. Now, that might have been his agent Jason Glushon just pushing leverage, but if the Pacers were offering something around the 490, they did just give 10 to Darren Collison and 10 more to Bogdanovich, it's not totally out of the realm of possibility that happened. Do you give any credit to what Jrue Holiday is saying, or are you more on the Jamile train?
I'm very much with Jamal on that one. When I was watching that, I was just like, this is so unconvincing. It really reminds me of me in a way, and like when I'm trying to feign excitement and I just can't do it. But I'm also not a $25 million a year lead guard now, you know what I mean? But I consider that statement a half truth. I mean, why, like Jamal said, why do you have to sleep on it? You know, the team was there for you when you came injured, and we found out that you knew about your injury, and they're still trying to bring you back. They give you all the time you need with your wife. All your teammates want you there. You're obviously an integral part of what we do defensively. I just think, like you said, you know, he just held us over the coals. Like, there's no reason to sleep on that. You know, just like you said, should have been 1201. And the thing is if you would have taken $18 million a year instead of $24-25 million a year, then, you know, we'd still have the MLE, the BAE, and be able to bring Dante Cunningham back without, like, worrying about getting too close to the luxury tax, and also maybe be able to trade to further bolster the roster. And I mean, like Jamal said, like, you know, I'm not about keeping money in Benson's pockets or anything, but, you know, when you really want to build a team and these are your brothers, and sure, Dante would be considered one of his brothers. Now Dante's maybe out on a limb there, not being able to come back, or he might have to take like a huge pay cut to come back of what he could have had, you know? So I don't know how much I buy into that, but again, I like Drew. My main problems with him have been really his personality and sort of lack of fire, but he's a very quality player, very good defender. And, you know, we needed to get him back, and he knew it, and he used everything he could to get what he could because he knew we needed it. And that's just the bottom line.
All right, I thought I'd play devil's advocate. Thanks for sticking with me. I saw Drew Holiday working out in the Pelicans training facility online, and we're a bit spoiled as far as information goes in the NBA. I feel like the moment an agreement happens, we've got the full workup on it. We know how many dollars, how many years. In the NFL, we don't get some of this information for weeks and weeks, so I still like to think maybe there was a dark horse contender in there that we weren't aware of. But anyway, this is all in the past. We've talked enough about Drew Holiday. Let's talk about days 5 through 7 of free agency. Before we get to the Pels and their free agent targets, let's just wrap it up a little bit. Kevin, this was supposed to be a summer of conservation, really, with a lower cap, lower than expected. Teams were expected to be diligent and careful with their spending, and yet in the past 24 hours, we've seen the Heat give out $162 million to James Johnson, Kelly Olynyk, and Dion Waiters. Tim Hardaway gets $71 million from the Knicks. Otto Porter gets $106 million. This all seemingly in response to the Gordon Hayward agreement 2 days ago. Kevin, are you surprised still at the volume of money being given out a full week into free agency now?
I really am. I mean, like I've said this before, like in the first couple of days of free agency when just everything was like popping off, I feel like the off season took mushrooms or something. It's like, it's wild. I mean, I never, you know, imagined, you know, like Tim Hardaway getting that kind of deal. And I like Tim Hardaway. Like, I remember like right before the trade deadline, they were talking about Atlanta, like trying to dump him for a second round pick. And at the time we had like 1,000 guards on the roster, but I was still like, I don't know, man, you know, you bring him in and see what happens. I mean, wow, that contract is crazy. But I mean, I do think he's a good player, but man, the Knicks are just stay the Knicks, huh?
Yeah, on the Nate Duncan, I'm sure you guys probably listened to at least some Dunked On podcast with Nate Duncan and Danny LaRue on their mock offseason free agency wrap-up. Obviously, it's not going to be 100% accurate, but I did really think that by the time we got to this point, nobody was going to have money left, or at least the impetus to spend that much money. They had him going back to Atlanta for like 3 years and $25 million. Is that a bit closer to what you had, Jamal?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, the like you said, the 5 through 7 day period of free agency is really kind of this has been one of the weirder free agencies I have ever seen. Like, so it starts off with really more trades than anything else, with Chris Paul and Butler and all that, and then you have the big deals, and then the whole league is waiting on Gordon Hayward of all people, which he's a great player, but I kind of reserve that free agency on hold thing for like the elite players like LeBron or Durant or something. But we're on hold for him. And then we get to this point, and I really thought that all those sort of second tier players were, you know, kind of effed at this point. I thought they had missed out on a lot because all we heard coming into free agency was about how teams were going to, well, you know, after the first couple of days, how teams were capped out after the spending spree last season. And so then you start seeing these huge deals like Tim Hardaway, $71 million, Bogdanovich, $21 million. Usually at this point, you start seeing guys just take the one-year deals, just saying, okay, let me just try again next year. So, yeah, to answer your question, I was I am surprised, and I did think, like you said, 3 years, $25 million was closer to what he might get. But that said, I mean, it's starting to feel like even if the Pels wanted to play in free agency, they couldn't, right? They just don't. Dempsey has boxed himself in with, you know, a couple of bad deals with Hill and Osiek and, of course, issues with Poindexter and all that. So I'm not sure they even can operate here. So, you know, we'll see. Unless Dempsey can pull off a way to dump some of these contracts or a trade of some sort, the Pelicans might just have to improve from inside.
Kevin, the whole purpose of the new collective bargaining agreement was to give advantage to smaller market teams like New Orleans. When you see all this money being shelled out, although many of these teams are only giving 3 years or 2 years with a team option or partial guarantee, but still, with all this money going out, do you think this gives advantage to the Pelicans going forward with in terms of like bringing back DeMarcus Cousins, for example?
Well, I mean, people are going to have less money to spend because they're spending money right now, and then they have to come up with ways to clear space. So I would say, yeah, because, I mean, you got to also remember that Boogie also is lost out on the Supermax by being traded to us. So it's unlikely, as long as something catastrophic doesn't happen here, that he'd want to leave more money behind. So I think that does help. But in terms of, like the CBA, I mean, as long as players will sacrifice money to win, you know, that's still going to drive players to take less money to play for the Warriors and the Spurs and those sort of really established contending organizations. So, I mean, there is protection in there, but there's still also that lore of the ring that, you know, you have to combat also.
Yeah, I just hope Boogie never strikes me as a ring chaser, but we'll see going forward into next season. Jamile, it wasn't all big bucks. There were also some very manageable contracts that you'd have to think the Pels would have gotten involved in. Are you disappointed the Pels didn't make a move on some of the guys I'm about to list? Avery Bradley, they packaged him in a second-round pick for Marcus Morris. You'd have to think the Pelicans could have done something like, I don't know, given Quincy Poindexter and maybe a lottery-protected first or maybe 2 second-rounds. Bojan Bogdanović went for 2 years, $21 million. Only the first one is completely guaranteed. Are any of these contracts 1 year for $3 million to Tyreek? Are you disappointed the Pels didn't get in on any of these?
Well, I've always had a soft spot for Tyreek. I always thought he was really a fantastic player for, you know, if in the right role. I thought he was miscast a lot. And I also thought early, you know, the Pels' struggles on the wings forced him to sort of play out of position a lot. But regardless of all that, yeah, I was disappointed that maybe we couldn't bring back Tyreek on that small deal. Or Avery Bradley, I do like him as a player, but I'm not upset that they didn't get him in a trade. And here's the reason why. Like, the Pels really, I mean, one, I think Bradley's contract is coming up after the season, I believe. I think that's correct, right?
Correct.
And yeah, so there's that. And then I think the Pels need to start thinking about John Wall, right? And people always scoff when I say this because Pelicans fans don't think anything good can happen. But but really, like, you have to think about it. He was one of the few big time players that even made a real comment when the trade for Boogie was made. Boogie's one of his best friends in the league, as well as Anthony Davis, you know, with the UK connection, although I know he's closer to Boogie. We see Davis and Boogie have really connected. They're out there working out every day with each other in LA. So you can't say it's outside the possibility. John Wall's not going to do anything in Washington this year, and he knows it. He basically turned down the Supermax. And so whatever tiny assets the Pelicans can piecemeal together, I think they need to hold it for when they can get a real difference maker. And Washington, knowing that John Wall has turned down the Supermax, may be in a position getting close to the deadline where they've got to do something, right? And if the Pels can offer them, you know, a couple of first round picks and, you know, send out, I don't know, just whoever, right? That the Wizards would want to take off our roster, which I'm sure would be, you know, pretty slim pickings other than AD and Boogie, of course, right? But I would even send Drew out if they wanted Drew. If Drew's having a good first half, hopefully, and they want Drew and a couple first round picks for John Wall all day, right? So why waste it on, and not say Avery Bradley's a waste because he's a really good player and he is a needle mover, but not as much as someone like John Wall. So I think just take that chance because you're in position for that. Boogie seems to actually like it here, right? And he seems to be committed, something that he was never really committed to in Sacramento, right? We've seen him get his body in shape, which was a long time complaint in Sacramento. And after just a couple months with the Pels, you know, he's taking this opportunity seriously, is what I'm saying. And he knows that he can get the big contract. He can have a, you know, a really not only dynamic, but really, if it goes right, a legendary combination with Anthony Davis. And so I think he's seeing that. And you could see a second half of his career where he kind of gets it in the way that maybe Zach Randolph did, only he's, you know, exponentially more talented than Randolph. So I think the Pelicans have to take, even if it's a tiny chance, you have to take that chance because how many times are you going to actually have a chance to put together a super team? And I don't want to give up that for Avery Bradley as much as I like him. So.
Yeah, definitely. And it'll be tricky next season because if we are in a position where John Wall wants to come to New Orleans, you'd have to think that we had a really successful year and Drew Holiday would have to be a large part of that. So that will, I mean, we'll see. There's no sense in talking about it now. What we should talk about is Nick Young, reportedly, according to Zach
Swaggy. Lowe.
Sorry, what'd you say?
Oh, no, I was just saying Swaggy.
Yeah, Swaggy P. According to Zach Lowe and Tom Haberstroh, we were supposed to have Swaggy P in New Orleans. It's rumored that DeMarcus Cousins was catering to him, telling him he needed to join us in the Bayou. Kevin, are you surprised that everyone, it seems, was under the premonition that Nick Young was going to join New Orleans, but instead opted for Golden State at the last possible moment?
I mean, I'm not surprised at that. If the Warriors come calling, and he's getting older. You get a chance to go chase a ring, live in Southern California. I mean, out by the Bay. That sounds pretty good. I mean, honestly, I'm glad they called because I have no interest in having Nick Young on this roster myself, really. I want to go back and applaud Jamal for appreciating Tyreke Evans as the president of the Tyreke Evans. that always warms my heart when another person appreciates Tyreke the way I do. I wasn't into Nick Young and I didn't want to commit too much to the future of him either. I mean, I don't think maybe he improves the roster by 5%, but is that going to really help you that much? To piggyback on what Jamal also said about the AD and Boogie pairing, I mean, it's like, you know, it's like Duncan and Robinson, except for they even have more skills. I'm not going to say they're as good as defenders as those two, but offensively they have skills that those guys didn't have. So it is something that can be very historic here and be very special. And I think we're going to be one of those weird team that everybody has trouble matching up with. You know, like a few years ago, that sort of Memphis Grizzlies team, yeah, Gasol and Randolph and Allen, they didn't contend for a championship, but nobody wanted to play them. And, they had a level of success that energized that fan base, kept them interested. It was fun. They had an identity that was different than other people. And I think that's what we can have here. And I'm fine with that. Like Jamal and I were just talking about that, you know, like I don't really like the championship or bust mentality in basketball because it's almost impossible to win a championship, especially in this landscape and in a small market. But if you can put a, you know, a 50-win team out there, a team that's fun to watch, a team that's different, a team that's unique, that has personality, I'm all for that. And I think we already have the foundation for that. And I don't want to, like, sacrifice things for, you know, Nick Young. I don't know. He just doesn't seem like he would really improve this team that much.
I definitely agree. Nick Young's 32, and he is what he is at this point. He's, you know, a great three-point shooter who's a bit of an oddball. But, Jamal, I don't want to let this go quite yet because just from Zach Lowe's perspective, it seemed to be a done deal. And you'd have to think if the Pelicans and Golden State both offered 1 year, $5 million, it's a no-brainer. There's no choice involved. He would go to Golden State. But even Golden State was convinced that he was going to New Orleans. Do you think it's just because, you know, he and Boogie have a good relationship, or do you think New Orleans maybe had a larger offer that they pulled at the last second? What made this surprising move take place?
Well, you know, I'm hoping that maybe they had a good trade in, you know, for somebody who obviously is a bigger deal than Nick Young, and they felt that they needed more flexibility to pull that off. And maybe we'll see that come down in the next couple of days. Who knows? I guess time will tell on that. If they just pulled it, if they didn't have a good reason to pull it, I don't necessarily like that. Not because I like Nick Young, but because there's a certain way you do business, right? You offer somebody something, and the offer should stand if you want that person inside your organization. But, you know, free agency and the trade market are fast moving market. So yeah, if they had something developed and they needed that money or that roster spot to bring in players for a trade that they're preparing, then I don't have a problem with it. But I guess we won't know that for a little while. But it is kind of weird. I don't hate Nick Young. He can shoot, and maybe Darren Erme, he does have, you know, sort of the body we're looking for, a long athletic player on the wing. Maybe Darren Erman could have worked with him and made him a viable defender. But, you know, at 32, that's not necessarily something you really want to bank on, somebody changing at their basketball game at the age of 32. So, you know, I could also have seen it just being like, you know, the Warriors were also recruiting him pretty hard, right? They were all over social media, all their big time players, you know, tweeting him and, you know, sending Snapchats out. You know, Draymond had one with him and Nick Young partying together. And he could have just thought, look, man, we all see the afterglow that people who win championships have, right? Even crappy role players, you know, they win a championship and then all of a sudden he's the guy with championship pedigree and he's bringing, you know, championship experience into the locker room of some team that's signing him, right? And so I could see him saying saying, okay, well, maybe I'll go play with the Pels, and, you know, because I'm going to get more shots and more minutes likely than I would on the Warriors. And then at the last second saying, or I could win a ring and go back into free agency next year and people will look at me differently. They'll actually, because the one problem Nick Young has in terms of his NBA sort of persona is that no one takes him seriously, right? He's kind of a joke, even though he's got some skill. But, you know, he's mostly a joke, right? And we see that all the time. And so if he goes out there, maybe hits a big shot in the playoffs or, you know, commits to defense with the Warriors, you know, people may look at him differently. And who knows, he might get next year like a 2-year, $10 million deal or something like a 2-year, $20 million deal, something like that. So I could see him just changing his mind. You know, the Warriors, honestly, as much as I love the Pelicans, if the Warriors offered me a roster spot and the Pelicans offered me a roster spot, I'm probably taking the Warriors, right? I get that ring. I get to be in that crazy offense that they run and play with these, you know, amazing players in this amazing system. In New Orleans, yeah, you might have a chance for more minutes, but there's more question marks. So he may have just changed his mind. It might be as simple as that.
Just to keep you go ahead.
I was going to say, I like what you just said about, you know, like trying to change his image, because, I mean, just look at what happened with JaVale McGee during the playoffs. You know, like people talk about him as a viable player, and, you know, and, you know, that guy has been, you know, considered a joke for his entire career. And now, like, people are like, well, he, you know, he was a contributor. He made a difference on that roster. So, I mean, I think that's a very good point.
We've got some good news on Cheick Diallo. We're early on in the second quarter of Las Vegas Summer League. He has 12 points in 11 minutes on 6 of 8 shooting, just to keep you guys updated. To keep with the Warriors for a second, Kev, Omri Caspi just went for 1 year and $2 million, and a couple of people in New Orleans are on board with him being cut, or with the Pelicans cutting ties with him and losing out and his bird rights. How do you feel now watching the defending champs take on Omri Caspi?
I mean, that guy, like I said this about him, he's like he's the cup of tea Hall of Famer. Like, I mean, he's here for twice for a cup of tea, and everybody thinks we should retire his jersey. I mean, he's a good player. He's a quality player, and I think it's David Fisher said it in our little private chats that we have, that, like, you know, he's a replacement level player, which is a little bit of an upgrade over what we have at the small forward spot right now. But I mean, am I going to lose sleep over losing Omri Caspi? No. I mean, sure, he's fine, but again, it's like Nick Young. I mean, like, do they really make that much of a difference? I don't think so. I mean, I'd rather have Dante Cunningham at small forward than Omri Caspi, but that's just me.
All right, let's move right ahead. Scott Kushner reported that the Pelicans won't pay the tax unless they are a championship-level team. And you just mentioned that earlier. We're not anywhere near that, but that's not the worst thing in the world. Just competing is something that's important to building on this culture going forward and re-signing DeMarcus Cousins. I'm going to give you a couple of names. I'm going to start with you, Kev. Just give me a yes or a no, and then I'll go over to Jamile, and whoever you guys give a yes to, we'll talk about a little bit. Kevin, are you interested in offering the full mid-level exception to Jamal Crawford?
No.
Thabo Sefolosha?
Nope.
Ian Clark?
Nah.
Tony Allen?
Nope.
Shabazz Muhammad?
Nope.
Ty Lawson?
No, definitely not.
CJ Miles?
CJ Miles, I don't know about the full level, full mid-level, but he's the only guy in that group that I would consider, and I would only do it for maybe like a 1 year deal, or like a 1 year with a team option on the second, to give you the flexibility you needed the next off season. I mean, he has a skill that we like, and he can play the two or the three, which I think is important. You know, everybody's trying to get a point guard, and I think if you're going to get a point guard, you need to get a point guard that's an amazing point guard, not just an average point guard or mid-level point guard, because we have 1,000 guards on this roster. Like, we have people that can play that role. What we need is people that can play the two or the three, or the three or the four. And I think Miles can play the two or the three, and he can shoot. So he makes sense, but again, he's not a guy that I think I see as like a long-term solution. I mean, we're still searching for that, for that three that we haven't had since Jamal Mashburn. AJ was great, but he was one dimensional, and then towards the end of his career when he was with us. But we still haven't found that solid three, and I don't think CJ Miles is that guy.
Jamile, I'm going to mention a couple of names, and then you just talk about whoever you want to. Shelvin Mack, Tyler Ennis, Derek Rose, Sergio Rodriguez, Ersan Ilyasova, Nikola Mirotic, and Jonas Jerebko. Are you interested in adding any of those players?
No, not really. Maybe Mirotic, if we could dump one of the bigs we have, but there's already a logjam there. I actually want to try to give Diallo more. I mean, I'm hoping he's ready for it, but give him most of the minutes behind Boogie and AD, hopefully. I think he could be really good in that role. But, yeah, I might be interested in Mirotić. He's got some interesting skills, and I've seen him play some good basketball in the past, and he's, you know, pretty savvy, a nice passer, which his team can use, especially, you know, when Boogie's off the floor, you know, having another big man who can sort of play, you know, a poor man's version of that role a little bit. So I'd be kind of interested in him on a short-term deal. But the rest of the guys, not really.
Just to keep you guys updated, Quinn Cook now has 12 points on 5 of 8 shooting, including a couple of step-back threes. Now, let's go to some, I guess, breaking news. It's more anonymous source. from Jake Madison today on Twitter, wrote that the Pelicans see themselves as a 7 seed or below right now, and looking around the market, they don't see anything that can improve them substantially from a free agency point of view, and I just mentioned some of the best names available, and it didn't ring any of your guys' bells. However, they do have some trade targets they believe will improve them much, much more, and some of the names that we've heard are Jeremy Lin, Will Barton, Eric Bledsoe, Josh Richardson, Stanley Johnson. Let's start with you, Kevin. Are there any trade targets out there that you'd be willing to package one or maybe more first-round picks to acquire?
Yeah, there are. There's one I want to address that you didn't mention that I'm totally not on board with. It's been like sort of the propaganda machine today is Reggie Jackson. I mean, I really do not get that at all. I mean, the guy he's been known to be a bad teammate. He's overpaid. I remember somebody mentioned this earlier today in our group chat that like Serge Ibaka and Kendrick Perkins would freeze him out. And those guys are like locker room legends, you know, like noted good teammates, but they didn't want to pass him the ball because of his personality. And Detroit can't wait to get rid of him. And we're talking about trading for this guy who's going to take minutes from Moore and Crawford, who I think are better players than him. And then again, like, you know, I'd rather have Drew Holiday running point than Reggie Jackson. So please no to that in that right now. But, you know, I've always been a huge Bledsoe fan. Like, I was really excited when I thought we were getting them in the Clippers trade, you know, when it looked like that. I was high on them back then. I still am now. I just don't see what we can offer Phoenix that they want in their state of trying to build. They're trying to build a young team, and we'd have to send over, you know, like an Ashik or a Jensa or some sort of combination of those kind of contracts with picks to get them to make the salaries work. Or even if we sent Etuan Moore over there, I mean, he's still young, but I don't think that's really what they're looking for, especially with Devin Booker on the roster. But there are guys that I like. I mean, Wilson Chandler would be another guy, but I'm looking more at like our trade exception guys, especially with our cap situation and the contracts that we have to trade, being Ashik and Ajinsa, who people probably don't want. And I would try to hang on to Etuan Moore if I could, because I really like him. I think he's undervalued and we didn't see his full potential last year. And I think we'll see it more this year. But one of the main guys that I would go after, and I wrote a trade piece about it back in April, is Rodney Hood. I mean, the Jazz might be a little gun shy with since Hayward bolted. He's, you know, entering the final year of his contract. He can play the one through the three. He's versatile. He's 6'8", can shoot. I mean, he is like, at the time when I wrote the piece, he was shooting 42.9% from three in catch and shoot situations. I mean, you can compare that to some, you know, like Bradley Beal was 42.3, Hield was 40.6, JJ Redick 44.6, Kevin Durant 43. He's like right up there with those numbers. He's athletic. He's had some injury issues, which may, you know, lessen his value and might be able to get him more easily. But I think maybe if you could package together, I would give a couple of picks and maybe a pick swap to get him on the roster. I think he could be that Jamal Mashburn kind of player that we've been needing so sorely at the three, and can play minutes at the two as well. And, you know, in a pinch if he had to at the one.
All right, Jamal, what about you?
I don't know. I mean, for me, I would be willing to make that trade. Well, assuming Phoenix would agree to anything the Pelicans could offer, I would be willing to make the Bledsoe trade. Only because, again, with my eye on the bigger prize next offseason, you know, Washington would take Bledsoe in a sign and trade, right? That's getting something for it, much more than most of these teams get for their stars. So, you know, it still sets you up for that. Or maybe you just keep Bledsoe, right? Bledsoe's a really good player, and he really does a lot of the same things that Wall does, although Wall's on a slightly higher level. I do like Rodney Hood, and I wouldn't mind. Sometimes you do have to, you know, just take the double. And, you know, he is a young guy. He is versatile. You know, he is that sort of tweener that everybody in the NBA is really looking for. I really don't know that Utah will be willing to part with him. I think that they can probably re-sign him, they think. But yeah, he's a solid player, and so I wouldn't hate that, especially having somebody 6'8 who can do so much. And defensively, with him, Drew, Boogie, and AD on the floor, and you know whatever they roll out at point guard, it would really be kind of an awesome, almost Milwaukee type defense in terms of length and all that. So something like that I'd be interested in. Bledsoe I'd be interested in. Lynn, I actually think he could be a decent fit on this team, but again, he's not a needle mover, and I shouldn't say that. He could have an impact on this team, but he's in the last year of his contract, and I think they could re-sign him, but it would be expensive, obviously. And to get him, you probably still have to give up a lot of the assets that you need to hold on to try to get an elite player.
All right, let's talk fixing the playoffs. All of this is a result of losing cap flexibility when we went from the expected 101 to 99 million as a result of the Dubs and the Cavs blazing through the playoffs. If we could get a couple more playoff games this year, maybe the cap goes up and we have more flexibility in chasing the John Walls of the world. Quickly, Jamile, do you have a method for fixing the playoffs? The most common thought is just to make it seeds 1 through 16 like college basketball. What's your take?
I mean, it's Occam's razor, right? Like sometimes the simplest explanation is what you should go with. So yeah, just do the top 16. It's been this way for quite a while, right? You know, we've had several seasons in the last decade where you have, you know, a 50 win team or maybe a 47 win team sitting out while the East, you know, has, you know, some team with a losing record in their last spot, and a bunch of other teams who, you know, even though they're higher seeded in the East, we know that if it were open seeding, it wouldn't be that way. And what do you want at the end of the day? At the end of the day, you want the two best teams to play. And if the two best teams are the Spurs and the Warriors, then let the Spurs and the Warriors play, right? Instead of letting, you know, LeBron James cakewalk to the finals every year by beating DeMar DeRozan, like, you know, open it up and do what makes sense, right? This is what I always say. With college football, right? They never want to do what makes sense and just have an actual playoff, even though they have like a mini playoff now. So yeah, I think just top 16 teams make it, regardless of conference. I mean, you can still have conferences and divisions and all that, and you can work out the details of how that works out with home court advantage or something like that. But let the top 16 teams get in and play, because sometimes you have a team that's sitting at the bottom of the West that can beat. You know, there's been years where there's been teams towards the bottom of the West that we know can beat, you know, maybe 8-7, maybe even 6 in the East, right? So where do the Raptors rank in the Western Conference? Like, I mean, really, like if they were in the Western Conference, they'd still be a fine team. But, you know, they're not, you know, a top 3 seed like they are routinely in the East right now, right? They're probably a fringe playoff team or probably a 6 seed or something like that in the West, and this year maybe even lower. So yeah, just open it up, let everybody just play it. You know, I understand why they set it up that way in the past, because travel and a lot of different things, but we're not in the past anymore. And the NBA, to its credit, is generally, of the sports leagues in the U.S., is one of the more forward-thinking leagues. I think that's why a lot of a lot of younger people gravitate towards it. Because when they see something that doesn't make sense, they fix it instead of just being stubborn like baseball, who, you know, doesn't want to implement replays and things like that. So, you know, do what makes sense is all I'm saying.
Kevin, we're going into Las Vegas Summer League right now, and you'd have to think the competition committee is having a meeting at some point this week. Adam Silver is on hand in Las Vegas. Do you think that this is something that could happen immediately, or do you think we're at least one season away from this?
I mean, I think it's, I don't think they can do it now. It has to be like, you have to have a full off season to prepare for that, I think. And I think, you know, they need to work it out, iron it out. How's it going to work? You know, I mean, I wrote that piece that was like sort of an idea of how to do that, where you would just eliminate conferences completely and everybody play each other three times a year. And that would raise the amount of games that, from 82 to 87, which would, you know, require some tweaking of the CBA and all of that would be complicated, but it would be a way to solve it. And things, but solving this problem isn't something that can happen right now with the, you know, season being in October and everybody's still focusing on free agency and training camp and all of that. So I think it needs to be something that they talk about all year and then try to work it out next season, maybe.
Just to keep you guys up to date on breaking news, Sam Amick is reporting, that Jamal Crawford is being courted by Minnesota, Washington, and Cleveland. I think that was previously reported as well. I'm going to give you guys Del Demps' hat for a second. The logic would suggest that if the Pelicans don't make the playoffs this year, he's likely going to be out of a job. Alvin Gentry's likely going to be out of a job. So let's say that I can predict the future, and the Pelicans staff have already self-admittedly through Jake Madison that they already don't think they can make the playoffs without making a substantial move. If I give you the power right now to make a move, Kevin, within reason, what is your go-to move to get the Pelicans into the playoffs?
Well, I already touched on this a bit, but I would say can I do like three moves?
Sure, go ahead. You can do whatever you want. Okay. You're the general manager.
So the first move would be to do what I could to get Rodney Hood. You know, I would give up as many as like two picks, because if this works, you're going to be picking at the end of the first round where there's not much to choose from anyway. And now you got to cash in to keep Boogie and keep afloat in the Western Conference. So I'd offer as much as two picks and a swap if needed, get him on the roster. And then I would see what I could do to possibly get Kyle O'Quinn from the Knicks, because I think he would be a very good backup big man. He has a lot of similar skills to DeMarcus Cousins. So if DeMarcus Cousins would get hurt for any stretch, you could plug him in, play that. He could play next to Cousins or AD. He's a good passer out of the post, has a good mid-range jumper, good rebounder. And then I would also bring Dante Cunningham back. And that would be what I would do. And I think with that core, you would have a pretty decent chance of, competing in the playoffs.
Definitely. You'd have to shed some salary. Not much for Rodney Hood, but I think Kyle O'Quinn is probably somewhere around five. Although the two of those could fit under the mid-level, so it would be tight. What do you think, Jamal? What would you do?
I would probably start with prayer, right?
Did you say prayer?
Yeah. just let's just start from there and see how that works for us. Maybe meditation, but I think the sad thing about the situation the Pelicans are in is that their decisions essentially have been made for them this offseason in past off seasons, right? The minute they gave Osick that deal, the minute they gave Hill his deal. I mean, I don't hate Solomon Hill, but I do hate him at his number. And it's not totally clear that anyone else was sort of that high, but maybe they were, right? Give Dell some credit. So maybe they were, but even at that point, I'd probably just walk away from it. But, you know, whatever, he signed the deal, and that is the flexibility that they needed, right? If they had that kind of flexibility with, you know, basically those two contracts off the books this offseason, or if those contracts had been more reasonable where you could dump them this offseason, you know, they're in a completely different situation. So honestly, I don't really see, and look, I hope Dell proves me wrong. I hope maybe he finds a way to get a difference maker, like Bledsoe or somebody. I wouldn't hate Jeremy Lin. I would like to get CJ Miles. I'm not sure if he signed yet. I think he might still be out there. On like a one-year mid-level deal, something like that. So if he can pull that off, fine. And I would be happy to say I'm wrong. But honestly, the cupboard is so bare at this point that I'm just not sure that there's anything that they can do to bring in a real difference maker at this point. But with that said, I actually, for whatever reason, I'm higher on their team than they are, apparently. Because, look, you have two top 15 players in the league, right? And you have Boogie with his apparently, you know, we have seen this story before, but, you know, nobody wants to acknowledge stuff until after it happens. And then they're all like, oh, we should have seen it coming. Like, we've seen the story of Knucklehead gets his shit together, right? And we're seeing it right now with Boogie Cousins. Like, he's getting his shit together. And if they can build this offense around him and have it work better, sometimes a team can be greater than the sum of its parts. We've seen it, right? We saw it with, say, those old school Pistons that won the championship with Billups and all those guys. We saw it, a glimpse of it late in the season with Denver, right, where they were, you know, really playing gangbusters with a good young roster, but not like a roster that you're terrified of in terms of, you know, any contenders being terrified of them. But they were playing really good basketball. And so if you can do that, sometimes you can play above. So the Pelicans, what they're really going to need is they're going to need improvement from the guys already on their roster. You have somebody who you're paying more than Anthony Davis, right? We need more out of Drew Holiday. Like the Drew that we saw last year, even though he was, you know, and Drew has always been good in spurts, but we need those spurts where he's averaging 20 points and 8 assists a game. We need those to be consistent, especially when we're paying you more than Anthony Davis, which kind of pisses me off. So that's the improvement they need. They need Solomon Hill to continue improving shooting. If they bring Dante Cunningham, that's definitely someone I want to bring back. And just a side note on Dante Cunningham, there's a outside of basketball reason I want to bring Cunningham back, and it's because organizationally you need Dante Cunningham type players. And what I mean by that is not what he brings on the floor. What I mean is guys who you actually develop, right? There's a bond that happens with players that go through organizations, and those organizations actually put time and effort into them when nobody else was willing to do that. You look at Danny Green and how he feels about the Spurs when they basically pull him off the trash heap, and they actually put time and effort and energy into him, into developing his game. And the Pelicans obviously have done that with him, and we are seeing the benefits. So why let another team reap those benefits, right? They need those Spurs-type stories where they bring a guy in that nobody else was willing to work with and turn him into something that is a positive for him. So I would definitely bring Cunningham back for the Pels, as well as those other moves I was talking about.
You guys, thank you so much for your time. Kevin and Jamile, you can follow them on Twitter at Kevin B for Bounce, JamDun06. By the way, my name is Preston L. Preston Ellis. I can't even say my own name. Keep your eyes on thebirdrights.com for all the latest news. We're at halftime right now of the Pelicans versus the Raptors. The Pelicans are leading. Chek Diallo has 19 points. And James Young is playing well, and Quinn Cook has 12. So keep your eyes open for that. Tomorrow morning, we'll have the full recap on that. In addition, you are listening to the Bird Rights podcast right now. We're going to have Charles LaRocca from Hoops Habit on Monday morning recapping some of the Summer League action. He is there in attendance. So I'll get his tidbits on what he's seen, the general conversations happening there. And again, thank you guys so much for your support. If you like what you're hearing, subscribe, retweet, like, go on iTunes, leave a rating. We really appreciate all the help that you guys give. Again, keep checking back for more. We're going to keep you guys right here. Kevin, I'm sure we'll have him back soon. And Jamile, wonderful job. I'd love to have you back anytime you're available. Thank you guys. For now, sports fans, let's go Pels.